Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shame on You. Imagine interviewing your exes for the world to hear. Well, guess what? That's the sort of thing that happens on the Shame on You podcast. Shame on You is the pod where two best friends work to eradicate gay shame by interviewing gay men from all walks of life. A great episode to start with is Adrian the Stripper, with whom one of the hosts went on a date. Shame on You is the fastest growing gay podcast in the world, so check it out. Now on with our show. Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. I'm here in the studio, as always, with my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Matt. I'm pretty sure that I've seen you almost every day for the past 2 weeks.
Is that why you're depressed?
I think so. I think that's what's happening.
Almost every day.
Almost every day.
Yeah. My mom thinks you're a terrible influence
on me. It really upsets me. I only want Debbie to love me.
She's convinced that you've turned me into a pothead, that you're now holding a gun to my head in the hopes that I will adopt a dog, which is likely.
Both are true.
Anyway, let's get on with the episode. We're going to kick things off with Worst Things First, where I chat about the worst news of the week. After that, we are diving deep into fall, bitch. It's autumn. You might even say we are falling into autumn. You might even say that it's still 90 degrees outside, so why the fuck are we complaining about fall already? But you know what? The fact that it's 90 degrees outside when it is technically fall is worth complaining about, okay? And finally, we have Laura Dreyfus in the stude. Laura is an actress, literal Broadway star. You know her from Glee. She was the original Zoe in Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway. And now she's in Netflix's The Politician opposite Ben Platt. We talk about all of that and so much more. So let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's wrap ourselves in autumnal scarves and start the show. All right, horse things first. Let's talk about the worst news of the week. First, a Russian Navy boat out on a science expedition was attacked and may have been sunk, not by an enemy ship, but by a walrus protecting her calves.
Hell yeah.
Okay, giant fat walrus mom, welcome to the resistance. Oh, you thought the Cold War was over? No! These are professionally trained sleeper walruses who have been placed there by the American government.
Oh, my God.
To attack, quote unquote, scientists who are out there doing, quote unquote, science. What do you think is really going on? No, Soviet espionage. I've seen the Americans, all right? I watched 10 seasons of that fucking show all because you told me to. And now
you're welcome.
I want to see a Planet Earth Americans crossover.
Okay.
Where it's a walrus mom
mm-hmm.
who attacks a Russian spy boat.
I mean, yeah, I would watch that in a heartbeat.
Even though officials said it was just a science expedition. But we all know what that means. Porn shoot. I don't know. The joint expedition by Russia's Northern Fleet and Geographical Society was sailing in the Franz Josef Land Archipelago. I don't care about any of these words. In the Arctic Ocean last week when the incident occurred, Russian military officials said in a statement that the boat was attacked. Why are Russian military officials commenting on a science boat? That's what I want to know. I don't even feel safe talking about this, walrus. I feel like I could be targeted. Next! An elderly British couple has been accused of drug trafficking and is facing up to 12 years in prison. If convicted, they claim that a mysterious businessman tricked them into carrying 20 pounds of cocaine.
That's so much cocaine!
Yeah, okay. I don't know how you accidentally just acquire 20 pounds of cocaine.
Because, like,
exactly.
Cocaine's, like, light, right?
Also,
like,
their names are...
20 pounds of it is, like, a lot.
I don't know the density
you know
of
what
cocaine.
I mean?
Well, it's 9 kilos. So that's probably, like, 9 bricks of cocaine.
Damn.
Based on my limited knowledge of cocaine.
Did you see that tweet that Kendall Jenner... Kendall Jenner tweeted a photo of her holding a little dime bag and was like, oh my God, obsessed with this tiny Ziploc bag. People were like, clearly you've never bought that small amount of coke.
Right. The Jenners are buying bricks of cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like that their names are Roger and Sue Clark. Just the most British elderly names possible. Authorities say they discovered 9 kilos of cocaine hidden inside 4 travel cases in their cabin on a cruise ship near Portugal. Okay, yeah. So you're a rich elderly British couple traveling in Portugal on your pleasure yacht, and authorities come across 20 pounds of cocaine, and you're just going to pretend like you didn't know it was there. Okay, Roger and Sue, fuck off. The couple claims that they were unaware of the drugs. According to them, a Jamaican businessman named Lee. This is just exactly what you would say. A Jamaican businessman named Lee paid for their cruises and simply asked them to pick up empty cases from a middleman. They also claim that Lee asked them to purchase exotic fruit for him. How do you not know what's going on?
No free cruise is really free.
Yeah.
Unless you won that by one of those telemarketer robots calling you, telling you you won a cruise, you are trafficking drugs.
The couple was previously convicted in 2010 for trafficking cannabis resin near Norway. Okay, first of all, obsessed with Roger and Sue. They are fucking modern-day Carmen Sandiegos. I want a whole season of Narcos just about Roger and Sue. They are definitely the king and queen pins of, like, a international cartel. Yeah, how are you going to just pretend like you didn't know this was happening?
I just love that lie. Also because they probably had so much time to think about a lie to use. And the one that they thought of was a Jamaican man told us that this cruise would be free if we trafficked these drugs.
Yeah.
Or if we take this mysterious package.
Yeah. In the current case, authorities think that the couple had made contact with drug trafficking organizations multiple times over the last 2 years. And apparently they were only living off about $1,000 a month, but were somehow able to afford to spend approximately $22,000 on luxury cruises over a 2-year period.
You know what? This is a great travel hack.
Yeah.
Who needs Skyscanner when you can just meet up with international drug cartels and start trafficking?
Right. Where's our travel blog?
Yeah. Where's Roger and Sue's travel blog?
I'm going to go.
You know they probably have one.
I hope they do.
They probably do like reviews of cruises.
I'm going to do one of those like around the world in 180 day things, but only travel by making my money trafficking drugs.
Perfect.
What can go wrong?
We'll find out.
Next! Doctors in China say a patient allegedly got so drunk she swallowed a 6-inch spoon and forgot about it the next day.
How did she find out? How did she remember? Is it because she tried to go to the bathroom? A 6-inch spoon.
The patient reportedly went to a hospital with stomach pain, and then an x-ray revealed that a 6-inch spoon in her abdomen was the cause. Rather than open her stomach, the doctor decided on a gastroscopy procedure, which involves inserting it. Okay, we don't need to know all of that details. No. Removing a spoon. The doctor said removing a spoon through gastroscopy is very tricky. Firstly, the spoon was over 10 centimeters long. It was also very smooth and slippery and therefore difficult to control or grab a hold of. Don't you hate when that happens? When the spoon that you accidentally swallowed on a drunken night out gets too slippery inside of you and you can't, your doctor can't get a... Oh, even after snaring the spoon, it was difficult to pull out. It would get stuck along the way.
Was she just eating ice cream really fast?
Yeah, how do you accidentally swallow a 6-inch spoon and not realize it?
I'm afraid to eat ice cream drunk, which is iconically, famously the best time to eat ice cream.
Yeah, maybe it was one of those situations where it's like, you know, you're drunk, you go get a cone of ice cream, but you're like, I should probably get this in a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you get a spoon with it, but then halfway through it, you're just like, you're basically using your mouth anyway.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're like, did I even have a spoon?
Right.
No, it's gone. My favorite quote is the doctor said, quote, do not put small things in your mouth when you're drunk. Sorry, ladies.
Oh.
That's going to be very limiting for a lot of relationships. Am I right? Am I right? I mean, 6 inches is the average, okay? Don't make me be the spokesman. Don't make me defend Ben with small dicks. And finally... an unsuspecting Christian couple, this is from the Daily Mail, so there are a bunch of adjectives that just do not need to be here. An unsuspecting Christian couple adopted an adorable little girl, believed to be 6 years old, only to discover that she was actually a 22-year-old adult sociopath masquerading as a child. That is basically verbatim from the Daily Mail. I would not choose most of those words myself. Yeah. And this is literally the plot of the 2009 film, The Orphan. This is all playing out in real time. This girl's from Ukraine. You thought this was some crazy news was happening in Ukraine even without this.
Oh, topical.
But it's this is the weirder one.
I just want to preface this by saying this is a complex story. There's a lot that we're not going to be able to get into. There's debates about whether she's actually 22 or she's actually was a child. There's a lot. There's also like they were charged with being neglectful parents. There's a lot happening here, but we're just going to stay on the surface. You can do your research
right.
If you want to go deeper into it.
Yeah, I'm basically going to drunk history this story.
Do it.
In that I skimmed an article about it, and I'll try to recount it. But basically, this couple adopted, they're like foster parents. They'd fostered a bunch of children before. They were featured on 60 Minutes for another child that they adopted who turned out to be like a genius.
They adopted him? I thought that was their child.
Or it was their actual child.
It was their child.
But they do. I think they'd fostered other children, perhaps.
Okay. I know this was an emergency adoption.
Right. So this was an emergency adoption where they had like less than a day to like go to a place, like sign the papers. And then they get this girl who they were told was a Ukrainian-born 6-year-old who suffered from a rare form of dwarfism. So she was...
she like couldn't walk, apparently.
Right.
But then one day they were at the beach and she just like ran to the ocean.
Yeah. Then the weirdest part is that one day they gave her a bath and then she had a full bush of pubic hair.
By far the most upsetting part of this whole thing.
I don't know. I mean, it's so terrible. Well, the actual most upsetting thing is that they claim that the girl would make like mysterious and threatening, like terrifying statements about wanting to stab them in their sleep.
She would just like stand over them in their sleep, apparently, allegedly.
Yeah, she would make statements and draw pictures saying she wanted to kill family members, roll them up in a blanket, and put them in the backyard. That's actually so scary.
It's so scary.
Yeah, she was standing over them in their sleep. They had to hide all of the sharp objects. The mom says she saw her putting chemicals, bleach, Windex, something like that, in her coffee and asked her what she was doing. And then she allegedly said, "I'm trying to poison you." And yeah, I guess it all came to a head when they basically like left the girl and moved.
Right, because they were like, okay, you're 22. You can live on your own. We'll pay for your apartment.
Right. And they like signed a lease for her and they were like, all right, we're going to leave you.
Move to Canada so that their other son could like be this prodigy.
Right. And then now they're being sued for child neglect, for like abandoning. Yeah. And there was one doctor who I guess did like a bone density test and it claims that the girl was actually a 22-year-old woman. Because of this like rare form of dwarfism, you couldn't actually tell what her real age is. And now there, I guess, are disputing reports now of whether she was actually 22 or whether she was actually a child. I don't know. It's so fucked.
I don't know. All of it's fucked. All of it's wild. Orphan is real.
The scariest part is that apparently this girl, however old she is just missing.
No one's heard from her, at least.
Now I'm afraid she's going to show up and kill me.
She's an avid Unhappy Hour listener.
Oh my God. What if she is? Anyway, best wishes to everybody involved in this story. It is truly horrifying.
We'll stay up to date with it. This is not where you should be getting your news, but we will stay up to date with this.
And on that note, that's it for this week's Worst Things First. Next, we're going to get a little bit lighter and talk about fall. Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. Deep dive,
deep dive,
deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. All right, well, it's that time of year again. The chunky scarves are out. The autumn boots are strapped on. The pumpkin spice is being ground from the pumpkin spice tree, or however pumpkin spice is made. Actually, I looked it up. Do you know pumpkin spice is just a mix of a bunch of other spices?
What?
It's not even made of pumpkin. It's just the spices that go into a pumpkin pie.
We are all fools.
So it's what British people call like mixed spice. It's like cinnamon,
clove,
clove,
yeah,
and nutmeg. Who knew? Did everybody else know this? I just assume, well, you get like a pumpkin spice latte. I assume that it was like spice made of pumpkins. Lies! Oh, now a whole bunch of fucking baristas are going to DM me again and be like, oh, actually, we fucking carve our own pumpkins and do the juice. No, fuck off. Anyway, so pumpkin spice is a lie that you're telling yourself. Either way, fall is here, at least according to the calendar, because it's still 80 fucking degrees outside in New York, and I should be sweating through a wool sweater right now and not sweating through a t-shirt and shorts. Because I'm still going to sweat. Let's not get that wrong. So, as is my annual tradition, let's get into it. Reasons fall is the worst. First, I have to replace my whole goddamn wardrobe. I finally got used to wearing shorts in public, and now I gotta trudge out all of my long sleeve shorts, aka pants. You know how much longer it takes me to get out of pants at the end of the day compared to getting out of shorts? Hours. Hours it takes me. There's so much more tugging. There's so much more pulling. I have to break for my breathing exercises.
You know what you gotta get?
What?
You gotta get zip-offs. Zip-off, zip-on.
Absolutely not.
Do it. Do it. You can even do double zip so you can do it like a capri length.
Do you
for
think
the transitional weather.
And serial killer from Iowa?
Maybe.
I will never wear zip-off pants. I think I wore zip-off pants once in my life. And it tore my family apart. So apologize. Next! Also, like everybody else, I think I'm going to look so cute in all of my fall clothes. But really, we all just look like drunk Muppets. All fall clothes are just musty Muppet pelts. Also, every straight guy dresses like a lumberjack in the fall, and it's very confusing to me sexually. Am I supposed to just not get a boner at this J. Crew?
Well, too late!
Plus, everybody starts losing their shit over Halloween way too soon. I was walking yesterday and I passed one of those Halloween superstores that hadn't been there an hour before. And then I went into a full-blown existential meltdown. Because if I don't know where the Halloween superstore goes when Halloween is over, how am I supposed to know where anything goes? Does anything even exist at all? What happens when we die? Also, we like to pretend like things smell better in the fall, but they don't. Just because it's not a wet, hot American garbage bag outside doesn't mean it stops smelling. Fall smells like rotten caterpillars.
What?
Fall smells like your grandma's basement that flooded in that big storm in the 1950s. And then she got it professionally dried. But this was almost like 70 years ago. And she was a young woman then. And turns out she had an affair with one of the water damage guys. And he left an entire patch of carpet absolutely drenched with flood water. So now your grandma's basement smells like damp asshole. And also your entire life is a lie. Because guess what? That water repair guy is your real grandpa. Oh, that's what fall smells like. Next, all the fair weather iced coffee and ice cream fans start to show their true colors in the fall. You're just gonna stop eating ice cream and drinking iced coffee just because it's 20 degrees colder outside? Fake fans. You shouldn't be allowed to have any of it ever. Unless you're willing to claw a freezing cold plastic cup while the brittle autumn air threatens to wrench off your fingers, you're fake and you shouldn't be allowed to live. Also, my neck can't support the weight of a chunky scarf. I have a weak neck. What if my spine breaks? Because society told me I have to wear a chunky scarf because I'm gay. Homophobic. And everybody is too pale in the fall, and that's my thing. You're taking my thing from me by not being tan the entire winter and fall. Racist. Next! There's too many basic-ass fall activities that people try to get me to partake in. Apple picking? You expect me to go into a forest to do work? The only job I'm doing in a forest is a blowjob, okay?
Whoa.
That's what forests are for. Also, apple is one of the main ingredients of fall shit, and apples are mostly garbage.
I gotta say, I had to stop eating them when I had my braces because it would, like, break my braces, and I kind of lost my taste for apple after that.
What kind of apples were you eating? What kind of rock-hard apples?
You weren't allowed to just, like, bite into an apple.
Yeah, well, you cut them up.
That's too much work.
I do have one of those, like, apple slicers that you just push down.
Yeah, that's nice.
There's some hot guy, I had to unfollow him because his shit was just getting too weird. But he posted a story of him just eating the entire apple, and he was like, it's good for you.
I've eaten an apple core.
Yeah, but core, stem, all of it.
Yeah.
Sticker.
Well, no. Only because I was, like, on a hiking trip, and it was like, leave no trace. You're not supposed to just, like, throw apple cores around, because then apple, that's like crossing contamination. This isn't interesting.
Oh, you're gonna shit it out eventually, or did you carry your poop?
No, you bury it.
That's planting a seed! What is wrong with you?
Or my counselor just wanted to prank us, and I didn't notice it until now.
Yeah, you fertilized an entire forest with your nasty shits. But it's true. Apples are garbage. First of all, that's a worm's house that you're gentrifying with your white-ass teeth. I'll eat an apple. It's not that I don't care about an apple, but I just... cooked apples are gross. It's just a fruit slug that you're trying to trick my mouth into eating because it's in a pie crust. Fuck off. Also, taffy apples aren't as good as they pretend like they are. If I wanted to eat something covered in a bunch of dried, sticky gunk,
no,
I'd eat Dwayne The Rock Johnson's jockstrap. Because you know he wears a jockstrap exclusively. Also, fuck off if you want me to go on a hayride. You want me to sit on a lawnmower in a giant Tupperware container of dry-ass, scratchy-ass grass? Next thing you know, I have Lyme disease and a flaming rash on that one little dangly piece of elbow skin. And finally, fall is when Big Candle starts pushing all their nonsense down my vulnerable sinuses. Do you hear my nose always?
Yeah.
This is me not on candles. Do you know when candle season fires up? Pun. That you think my nostrils can withstand that? My delicate nasal cavity cannot stand the onslaught of salted caramel or sparkling cinnamon or whatever the fuck a juniper berry is. Here's a controversial opinion. Candles are all trash. I have never yet to meet a candle that I can withstand for more than 5 seconds at a time. Fuck candles. Fuck everybody who peddles candles. Fuck Yankee and Diptyque and all of the fucking nonsense places that pour a bunch of streamy yellow sap into a cup and then put a fucking match in it and try to sell it to me as something that I should light in my house to make the poop smell go away. I'm not here for it, even though I secretly love fall, and you know it's sure as shit I'm gonna fire up my maple candles when I get home. And my life is a lie. And that's it for this week's deep dive. Next, we got an interview with a Broadway star, Laura Dreyfus. My guest complainer today is actor, singer, sensation, Laura Dreyfus. You've seen her on Glee. She was the original Zoe on Broadway in Dear Evan Hansen. And now you can see her in the Netflix original series, The Politician. Welcome, Laura.
Hey.
How's it going?
Oh, it's great.
Good, good. We like to start things off, as always, by asking you, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
So nervous about this because I know there's a perfect answer and I can't think of it, but
there is no perfect answer. Honestly, my answer probably changes day to day.
I think I hate I hate when people jog at stoplights.
Yeah,
jogging in place at stoplights.
I'm seconds away from becoming that person. Well, I'll never jog.
No,
there's no reason I would ever jog.
I don't see the point.
But especially jogging in place.
But jogging in place at a stoplight. What are you trying to prove?
Yeah, your body will continue. You can pick up where you left off without having to stop.
Take a breath.
I like that. I like that.
Cool.
Yeah, I have an Apple Watch, not to brag.
Wow, flex.
But I do have an Apple Watch. And sometimes I do. I like when I see like hot guys that I follow on Instagram post their like Nike runs and it like tracks your run. Have you seen that?
I know it exists.
It like maps it out. Some people will like, you know, run in the shape of a penis and then laugh at it.
Oh, clever.
Yeah. I follow a lot of really mature people.
Sounds like it. Classy crowd.
So I started doing that just for like walks because I was like, I'm not going to jog, but I still want the joy of being able to see my path.
Mm.
And it does it buzzes when you stop at a corner because it's like, we're not counting this because you're stopped.
Wow. So Apple Watches are pro jogging in place.
I feel like it's actually pro not jogging in place because it's like, all right, we're stopping now and we'll pick up once you get going.
This is a healthy pause.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Apple's onto something.
Maybe. Yeah.
We're in the same camp.
I guess so. Apple Watch officially anti-jogging in place.
Have you ever unintentionally made a shape on your walk?
No. I feel like now my shape is mostly motivated by avoiding like Times Square because sometimes I like inadvertently will like make a turn and just like, all right, I'm committed to this path. And then I will walk right into Times Square, which is just like, it's not like I don't know where it is. I know it's there.
You don't need to go there unless you're seeing a show.
Yeah, I know. I mean, being a person of Broadway, I imagine that you encounter Times Square more than the normal person.
More than anyone should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does seem overwhelming to have to go there on purpose more than like once a month.
I hate the way it makes you see people. Because you stop seeing them as people and it becomes more like a video game.
Right.
And I don't think people realize this, but on Broadway, if you are late more than 3 times, and when I say late, it means like past the minute. You have to be there on the dot. The minute. So if you're late, you get fined like $70 to $150.
And, as an actor?
Yeah. Yeah. And some stage managers are a little more lenient than others, and some are very strict about the rule. It's like an equity rule. And so when you are on your third late and you're getting through Times Square and there's like just tourists stopped in the middle, you have to like elbow people because in your mind you're like, you're costing me $150. But it's really stressful because, yeah, there's still people and they should enjoy Times Square for the first time because that's magic.
I guess so. I think it maybe is like Disneyland where if you go as a child, there's something like majestic about it. But then you go as an adult and you're like, all I see is trash and urine and like it's
in
not.
Disneyland?
This applies to both Disneyland and Times Square. Yeah, I don't know.
No,
I just have never.
Elmos. There's Elmos everywhere.
Right. There's just like a crusty off-brand Elmo.
I got cat called by an Elmo. That ruined my childhood.
Yeah. Was it in the Elmo voice?
Yeah. No. Sadly, it was like this really husky, like, hey, baby.
That's worse. That's definitely worse.
Is that what you want?
Yeah. Anyway, that joyous note, let's talk about you.
Cool. Can't wait.
Where did you grow up?
New Jersey.
And what were you like as a child? Were you always like a theater kid? Did you fit into a different group?
I was a pretty weird kid. I didn't have a lot of friends, and I used to play by myself a lot.
Sure, same.
I have this specific... I also had, like, really big glasses and a lisp, and and I used to play in the playground by myself, and I was a raptor, because I was really into Jurassic Park. And so I would run around with my raptor claws, and I'd be like, wah, like making raptor noises. And nobody was playing with me. I was just off in the corner doing this.
Right.
And I remember like one girl coming up to me and being like, one day I was a different kind of dinosaur and maybe she could tell by my gait. But she came up to me and was like, are you not a raptor today, Laura? And like now looking back, I know she was making fun of me. But in the moment, I like honestly answered, no, today I'm a duckbill. And like ran off in my duckbill manner. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So, no, I was a weird kid. I didn't have a lot of friends. And then I joined theater.
Yeah. And then it was that like, oh, everybody else is a weirdo and I found my tribe?
Yeah,
or...
Well, I think theater people and artists in general just tend to be yes-anders.
Yeah.
And so everyone just says yeah to the weirdness and doesn't make you feel ashamed of it.
True, yeah.
And so that's sort of how, I don't know, that's how I think theater forms a community. You just feel like you're accepted. For who you are.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always weird to me, because I don't know that many theater people, but I get that sense from the people I do know. But at the same time, in my mind, it's still like, oh, you're all the, like, beautiful, like, talented people who I, like, would not have been friends with in high school.
That's
so it is
funny.
Weird. It is, yeah.
I see it as the opposite. I see
it's
it as all
the weirdos.
The weirdos who had like weird relationships with their parents and they're like, well, I'll just make art.
I mean, yeah, that is every artist. When did you start getting into a theater? Was that high school or later?
I pretty much did it my whole life.
Yeah.
I have an older sister. She's 10 years older. Mm-hmm. And she did theater. She's actually in the original cast of Mamma Mia.
Nice.
Yeah. So when I was 12 or so, I was watching her on Broadway and also had the same passion. And so it's funny, I think I had this like strange sense where it felt very attainable, even though it's really not.
Right.
But I think because I saw her do it, it seemed so easy. And yeah, so she just really inspired my whole journey to get to where I am.
Do you have other siblings?
I have a middle sister who has a PhD, so all across the board here.
Yeah, the wise one who chose not to get into entertainment.
Exactly.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be a lot to have even two actors in one family.
You'd think. I mean, I think we're both kind of soulmates in that way. We just met each other. So I don't know. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. Let's see. So Glee was first, right, before Broadway stuff?
Broadway stuff was first.
Yeah.
I did Hair and Once.
Right. That's right.
And then I did Glee.
Right.
And then, well, actually, I did the workshop of Dear Evan Hansen, and then I did Glee. And then I did Dear Evan Hansen.
Got it. Yeah. I think I saw Dear Evan Hansen twice.
Oh, cool.
I think you were in it both times, I'm sure.
Oh, cool.
fully sobbed both times, obviously, along with everybody else. It is truly alarming, and I don't know how you get used to it. to like be in the theater and just hear everybody around you crying.
Yeah. No, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And you did it,
like a year and a half.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's actually, it's weirdly satisfying. And,
no, it is like, I think it's cool to like be able to, A, share that same emotion mm-hmm. with so many other people, but also, yeah, to be able to like, everyone's coming in one mindset and then leaving in another. And then that's because of something that you did.
Yeah, it's like my version of church, I think. Like theater has a tendency to just like make you feel and you are transformed by the end. And it's like the amazing thing is that you're only existing that singular performance.
Right. We were talking a little bit about this before we turned the mics on, but the reference was when an Amber Alert goes off and like everyone's phones goes off in the middle of a performance.
So scary.
I just think about like as a comedian, if something happens in the audience, like I'm there, I can engage with it.
Yeah.
But as an actor in a play or a musical, you can't really. It's harder to engage with something that happens.
Yeah, it's this strange thing where everyone's kind of aware that something's going on. And so your mind suddenly splits into two places.
Right.
Into two, and you're just thinking about that. And then also simultaneously trying to do the scene until someone tells you to stop.
Yeah.
But it is weird. It's like really strange. We had, I think they were the Chinese New Year fireworks went off one year. And I was doing Only Us with Ben.
Uh-huh.
And we were staring at each other. And it was also kind of a weird time, like, you know, with North Korea. And so our mind went to a different place. And, you know, it's 2019, so things are a little on edge. And we were just staring at each other with this look of fear. And I think there was like a break in like the song, and I kind of whispered like, what do we do? And like we continued on and realized like when we got off stage, it was just fireworks. But it is that weird moment where you're like, well, I mean, we might all just die. So I guess we'll just keep going. Yeah. I don't know. What else can you do?
Yeah. It's good to know kind of what you would do in that situation.
Yeah.
And it's just continue singing.
It's the highest of stakes.
Yeah, I think so much about that, like, false alarm in Hawaii, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and for, like, however many minutes, 12, 15 minutes.
Goodness, can you imagine?
Everybody was like, yeah, we're definitely all going to die. Like, I don't know what I would do in that situation.
Yeah.
Sing, I guess.
Sing. It's a good way to go.
Make everybody else listen to me singing.
He went out singing.
Doing what he loved, forcing everybody to listen to him. I mean, is it weird to spend so much time with one character where, unlike, you know, being an actor in a show or a movie where you're literally embodying this character every day for like a year and a half, like you said, and like you were in preview, like all of that stuff that you have to do. Is it weird to do all of that and then like one day you're just not that anymore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess I shouldn't have asked that as a yes or no question. But.
No, I had a full on, like, I swear I got depressed after just because it was so much to process. And I also left the show and immediately started filming.
Yeah.
So I left Dear Evan Hansen after, like 4.5 years of my life, basically.
Right.
And then moved to LA within a week of finding out that I had, you know, gotten the show. So then I went to LA and was living a completely different life and was filming and focusing on that. And so when I came back to New York in the wintertime, I was like, what has my life been? And there's so much to unpack and process. And I definitely like had to like retreat from everything. It was a lot.
So you went right from Dear Evan Hansen to filming The Politician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was immediate.
Yeah. Which I maybe is better than like going to like nothing.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be pretty hard. It would be a hard hit to be sitting on your bed for 2 weeks thinking, okay.
But you'd done TV before. So, I mean, how was this sort of...
Yeah, the whole idea of getting to create a character and not really knowing where it's going is really exciting. And also having less time with the material.
Yeah.
Because with theater, you've been, especially with a show like Dear Evan Hansen, because we've workshopped that, we've done multiple productions. And so by the time we got to Broadway, we all felt so comfortable in those roles. And we were living with those words for so long that the Zoe that I was doing in DC was completely different from the Zoe on Broadway. Like, you know, it was just that time and experience with it. So yeah, moving on to TV, it's like you have to throw all of that out the window and just right. like go off of your first instinct and trust that that's going to work and
yeah.
not really care. like you and have to care like, a little less.
Yeah, great. Now it's on camera yeah, and it's out.
It's going to live
Netflix.
Forever and yeah. my grandchildren can see it and it better be good.
well, yeah, you know, the world will be gone in like 10 years
that's
anyway.
True.
So I think
worrying?
We'll all be fine.
Manhattan's going to be underwater. So
I binged all of The Politician yesterday.
Oh, wow.
I got to see. Well, by the time people hear this, it'll be out.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
so, but I binged it all yesterday. And yeah, I mean, I loved it. I will watch anything Ryan Murphy makes. Uh-huh. It's just like so campy and ridiculous.
Oh,
like
yeah.
everything
it's
and
absurd.
Like colorful. yeah. The story is a little like wacko and like goes a little bit off the rails at some point. But it all comes back. And yeah. So I guess for people who haven't seen it, tell us about your character.
So my character, McAfee, is Peyton's, Ben Platt's character, the lead role of the show. She's kind of his right-hand woman and his campaign strategist.
Right.
So, yeah, she's, like, just trying to get him to the White House.
Yeah.
but it's high school.
Yeah, I guess the plot in brief, without giving anything away, is that uh-huh. Peyton, Ben Platt's character, is running for student body president in the hopes of one day becoming the actual president.
Yeah.
And this is, like, very important to him. But I love how it's, like... This is true for almost every Ryan Murphy show where it's like, it's just understood that like we're all buying into the fact that these are the highest stakes possible
yes.
from the beginning.
Yes, yes, yes.
and everybody is treating it like it is the most serious thing. And then like there are real world, like shit mm-hmm. goes down. But yeah, it's just like, it is so fun to watch. And it like doesn't feel like I'm watching 8 hours of television in a row, even though that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, it moves very quickly.
yeah. One of the greatest scenes is you and Bette Midler, which seems very exciting slash nerve-wracking.
Oh my God,
I want to hear everything about that.
It was the coolest day ever. She's just like a force. Like, it's amazing. Like, she walks into a room and everybody just changes, like, even like how they sit. Like, it just becomes different. And it's just like her presence that she brings.
Yeah.
And that day was just... Oh, man. We were all looking around at each other, just, like, eyes wide. Couldn't believe it. And she is the best. Like, she's an actual queen. And just, it's amazing. Like, we were just, like, running our lines, kind of, to, like, get the feel of it. And then we were doing, like, a little rehearsal, and she was just kind of, like, doing her scene. And then all of a sudden we started, and she just, like, became this incredible character. And it was, like, these, like... eyes are just like boring into mine, and it was like this really amazing feeling of like oh man, I feel like I left my body a few times.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
There was a couple of scenes with her where I was like, I don't know why the scene is here, but I don't even care because it's Bette Midler just kind of going off.
Yeah.
And I'll watch her do that forever.
Oh, the amazing thing, too, is sadly, I don't think any of these will ever, like, made the actual cut. But, like, there's a scene where in the end of the scene, without giving anything away, I leave the room. And then she just started improvising and saying things. And the brilliant thing was, like, everyone in, like, where the director sits, like, we were all, like, covering our mouths because she
right.
was just going on and, like, saying the most ridiculous things. And it was brilliant. And... It's like no one wanted to yell cut because they just wanted to like listen to her
right.
continue.
yeah, I don't know how you even direct someone like that. It's just like you're Bette Midler.
Like
you can do whatever.
Oh, it's so cool.
And there were also some like pretty big name directors too
mm-hmm.
that you I saw. Well, Janet Mock was
Mock.
One.
God, what a queen.
Helen Hunt.
that was the coolest.
Yeah.
Moment. Yeah.
Yeah. What was that like?
I mean, well, both Janet and Helen are just, man, to have like actor directors, it's so amazing because they just know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The way they talk to actors is so special. And especially with Helen's episode, because I had to be like, slightly intimate at moments, and it was like the first time I've ever done anything like that on camera.
Right.
And so there's just this added layer of, I don't know, nerves. And she was just the best with it. Like, she just made everyone feel really comfortable and like No, she's just the coolest. I just really, like, I want to be her when I grow up, which is now I'm grown up, but I want to be her.
I mean, yeah, we've all got time to become Helen Hunt, I think. You also obviously star across Ben Platt in this show, as in Dear Evan Hansen. Was there a big difference between, like, stage and screen in that way?
I guess in terms of our friendship, no. Like, our relationship is always the same. But, right. like, as, yeah, creating these characters and the characters' relationships to each other are so different.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting and fun to discover. And it was also fun because there was so much pressure during Dear Evan Hansen because of, like, I don't know. Like, we went through, I guess with the shows, we were doing the show 8 times a week while the Tonys were happening. And,
yeah.
and so that, like, I don't think anyone realizes, like, how hard theater actors have to work when they're, like, in a show and it's, like, nominated for a Tony and multiple people are nominated for Tonys. And then there's all these galas that you have to go to and you still have to do the show 8 times a week and be really good.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was really a stressful time, even though it was wonderful and amazing. So it was fun to be able to work in an environment that just felt lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And also the subject matter was a little more fun. So we're not, you know.
Right, right.
The stakes were a little easier.
Yeah, yeah. True.
Like, we weren't crying 8 times a week. And right. so we could just, you know, enjoy each other and enjoy, like, the fun things we got to say to one another. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to, we have, we call it a game. It's not really a game. I say this every time. It's called Elaborate, and we found some tweets where you've said you've hated things, and I just want you to elaborate on them.
Oh, fun. Wow. Or
you've said something that, there's one tweet, I just want you to explain this one. Like, what, because clearly it's a very specific moment. The tweet is, there's nothing more vulnerable to me than someone having to take off their shoes at a party to reveal a petty sock. Clearly you were at a party and this happened.
You know that awkward moment when you didn't expect to take your shoes off?
Right.
And you're wearing the very small, like, no-show socks?
Mm-hmm.
They're very vulnerable.
I see. So when you someone in this tweet is you.
Yes. Yes.
I thought this was like a judgmental tweet about someone else.
But I've also seen others. I've also seen others have to do the same.
Right.
And it's very unsettling.
Yeah.
Because the sock, they're no-show socks for a reason.
Right.
They're not supposed to see the socks.
They're a secret.
They're a secret sock.
I do feel the need to apologize whenever I take off my shoe and I'm wearing a no-show sock and I'm like, sorry.
It's shameful. We're like,
yeah.
It's something about it. It's very vulnerable.
I mean, how many parties are you going to where you're taking off your shoes?
It's not so much like someone's demanding that I take off my shoes, but like you get there and everyone's shoes are off and you're like, well, I'm not going to be the asshole wearing, you know.
Yeah. There's no more shoes. Pressure to me than that moment when you arrive at someone's apartment who you've like, or house that you haven't been to.
It's like that Sex and the City episode when she takes off her Manolos
and
someone steals them.
Right.
And she's like, you owe me Manolos. And
I mean, I think it's fully ridiculous, though, to have a party and to make people take their shoes off.
I mean, you have to accept that, like, things are going to get dirty.
Yeah.
Just clean the house.
Yeah. I do think a lot about, like, what wearing my shoes in my apartment. Like, I take my shoes off. I'm not, like, wearing my shoes around my apartment.
Right.
But, like, if people are over, I don't care. And I've definitely walked everywhere in my apartment with my shoes off. All, like, 600 square feet.
I think if you are going to invite people into your home, you want them to feel as comfortable as possible. If you are going to be a host, you should make them comfortable. And if they want to keep their shoes on, you let them keep their shoes on. And you deal with the consequences.
I mean, don't put your shoes on, like, my table.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't care if they're everywhere.
Yeah, like, don't go stepping on my pillows, you know, but...
But I do think a lot about, like, especially when I'm walking on the street and then, I have my shoes on in my apartment. I'm like, everywhere I've ever stepped is
you
now
can't think too hard
apartment.
About it.
Yeah. It's all making us stronger inside.
Yes.
My immune system is impeccable. Okay. Now, moving on. Another tweet. We live in a divided country right now. People who hate Taylor Swift and people who love her.
Mm-hmm.
I can guess where you land
based on your recent tweets. Yeah.
You are pro Taylor Swift.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not anti Taylor Swift.
You know, I'm into her. This last album like really changed me. Like I was always kind of like into her. I was like, Taylor Swift. I like a lot of the songs that she's like. I really loved her earlier stuff, and I loved 1989, and then I loved Delicate, and then this album came out, and I can't stop listening to it.
I need to do a couple more like listen throughs. There are definitely songs that I'm into. I feel like Taylor Swift for me is one of those where at first I'm like. Oh,
yeah,
and then like
yeah.
slowly,
she's polarizing.
Yeah, she is. Especially, you love her, you hate her. Yeah.
Case in point.
Yeah, I will never forgive her for allegedly dating Harry Styles.
Oh, yeah. Allegedly.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what their true relationship was.
Mm-hmm.
I also passed Cara Delevingne, or however you say her name,
yeah.
on the street yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Another alleged mate.
Harry Styles.
Yeah. I'm really going through them.
Who's next?
I don't know, but now I carry a knife. I'm going to end up in jail.
Take them out.
Now we're getting into some older tweets.
Oh, God.
This is no. I bought a zebra print rug. I think I hate it.
Yeah, I did. I hated it. And it stayed in my closet for years.
It was just a zebra print rug, right?
I don't know what I was thinking. I thought it would be chic. And it wasn't like an African, like, chic zebra rug. It was like a shag rug. Like, it was like straight up from 1976.
just a zebra print.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college who was very wealthy, and I went to his house once, and he was like, yeah, that's a zebra rug. And it took me a second to be like, oh, that was it used to be an actual zebra that is now in your theater room that we're sitting and watching some
it's
dumbass show in.
It's creepy.
Yeah. I mean, any fur rug is a little weird.
Yeah, I think any animal skins or like animal heads.
Yeah, that I can't get behind.
I'm not into.
Right. A fur coat.
You love a fur.
I don't want to go on record. PETA will get mad at me.
Yeah.
Because someone from PETA has to listen to every podcast, and they will.
Oh, I'm sure they're everywhere.
Yeah, they will attack me.
I mean, I am a vegetarian.
Yeah.
So it would be pretty contradictory if I...
just walked around in a fur.
Just walk around in an animal skin and say, don't eat burgers.
There was that week where Beyonce went vegan, and every day she was photographed wearing like leather fur, a pepperoni pizza outfit.
I didn't even realize.
Which is like, okay, she can do whatever she wants.
She can do what she wants.
Yeah. If I were like a cow, I would say I would gladly like murder me so Beyonce can wear me.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I would feel the same.
Yeah.
I'd give my life for Beyonce.
Like, you can make leather out of me right now, and I would let Beyonce wear me. I never felt more judged than when my delivery order arrives and it has two forks. This happened to me recently.
It's a weird feeling.
Every time. I'm like, no, this is clearly not enough for two people.
No.
I sort of lost the sense of having, like, feeling like I need to convince the delivery person that I am with someone else.
I've recently given that up as well. I used to yell up to people when I would answer at the door and be like, it's here. There's no one home.
Yeah. I don't think that's necessary anymore. I'm like, you know what? Even though I see this person more than most other people in my life, it doesn't matter.
I've even gone to, like, the length of being on the phone with them while I'm ordering and then like saying like, is that good? Is that good? To somebody who's not in the room. Like, did you want a side? No? Okay. Yeah. So just the...
I haven't been that bad, but that is, you know, that's the life of an actor. You're creating a scene in that moment.
Oh, that's my best acting.
Besides watching The Politician, where can people find you and your work?
I think I have music coming out.
Yeah.
That I've written and, yeah.
Right. We should talk about that also before I let you go.
Yeah.
So you are releasing music
mm-hmm.
under your kind of like pseudonym,
yeah.
like alter ego.
Lola Dre.
Where did that name come from?
It's always been my nickname. Like my family has always called me Lola, and like I'm... Auntie Lola to my niece and nephew, and I don't know. It's just I felt like I needed a different name because it's so different from theater, and
right.
I didn't want people to think that it was the same, and
yeah.
And it was also just fun for me to make it this like fun like side indie project.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so it's coming out or it is out?
I mean, there's like two songs or three songs now. No, two songs. Two songs out.
Right.
And then an EP is coming out in like really soon, I think.
That's
couple weeks.
Exciting. Yeah. Is how, I mean, that's kind of like the first thing like this that you've done, right?
Yeah. It was terrifying. The first song I released was terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's really, really cool.
Yeah. It does seem like an exciting thing that is like, yeah, that's like in your world, but mm-hmm. still very much not and like new and exciting. And
yeah.
Yeah. But you did it. You
I
ripped
did
the
it.
Band-Aid off.
Oh, yeah.
The first one is out there. The first two.
The first two.
And now you'll have a whole EP.
I know.
Well, people can check that out. I'm mm-hmm. assuming it'll be on all of the mm-hmm. streaming spots.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, where else can people find you? Twitter, Instagram, all of that?
YouTube? Is that a thing?
Yeah, of course.
I'm probably on there. Yeah, no, I guess Twitter, Instagram, Netflix.
That's more things than I'm on, so. That's...
Maybe an illegal bootleg of Dear Evan Hansen, I don't know.
Great. All right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that helps all the bad stuff go down easier, starting with the TV we've been watching this week. Barry, what you been watching?
I've been watching Dairy Girls. It was recommended by many people, including our producer, Melissa, including a couple listeners. And I've watched the first season. Have you watched it?
No, I want to, though.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. They're very short episodes. They're like 20-something minute episodes, and there's only six in a season.
Mm-hmm.
So very easy to get through. So I watched season one. It wasn't the way that everyone talked about it. I thought it was going to be like laugh out loud outrageous. It's definitely not that, but I do like it, and it's fun. I've never seen anything set in that time period in Ireland either, so there's a lot of it's like during the Civil War stuff that I like just didn't know anything about, so that's interesting. But
what is the plot?
It's just like a Catholic high school comedy with this group of friends, and then like they're one of their British cousin who's a guy who's going to this all-girls school. And it's just like all the hijinks that they get into, and the hijinks are like pretty intense. And it's really fun. And it's, yeah, like I said, it's very quick to get through. And I've heard that season two is even better. So I'm excited to keep watching it.
There's two seasons. Series.
Yes, there are two series. Yes.
Also, we were just Googling it, and this is me being an idiot, but when you said Civil War, my mind went to the 1850s, and you're talking about the Irish Civil War.
Irish Civil War in the
80s. The 1990s.
Or 90, oh, 90s?
You fucking idiot!
Oh my god, it's the 90s? That's funny, so much, the way it's, okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, it's the 90s.
Oh, the best part is that now I'm going to be able to do like an incredible Irish accent. I also 100% need to watch it with captions on.
Yeah.
Don't know what they're saying. But yeah, what are you watching?
I am still binge watching The Great British Bake Off and very much craving everything I see. Yeah, the other day I did order a single piece of carrot cake, which is not even the most exciting thing to order.
No.
I should have just went all out. I like carrot cake, though, and I will defend it.
I like carrot cake. No one in here is saying anything bad about carrot cake.
I know. You just had a look in your eyes.
Oh, my God.
Like you were going to question it. So fuck off.
Okay.
But no, I binged watch. I mentioned this in the interview, but I binged watch all of The Politician on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
I got to see it early, but by by the time everyone hears this, it'll be out. So I liked it a lot, and I would recommend it. What's your non-TV chaser?
My non-TV chaser is a music chaser that I can't believe I haven't used yet, which is that Lana Del Rey's album, Norman Fucking Rockwell. Long-time listeners know I love Lana, and it's truly a chaser in the sense that, like, I was having a bad day, and in the evening I was trying to think of something to do to cheer me up, and I was like, you know what? I've listened to this album maybe 100 times already, but I'm going to fucking blast it in my apartment. And I did, and it made me feel so much better. So that's my chaser. What about you?
Mine is new underwear.
Hey.
Well, at first I was like, all right, I've lost some weight. I've definitely gone down a pant size. So I was like, maybe I could fit into smaller underwear. That's not really how it works. but there's a range. I'm pretty much settled on like, okay, my basic bone structure is not going to change all that much. I don't think I'm going to go down that many sizes. Things will fit differently. I think I've mentioned this before, but like I always have had like 1,000 pairs of underwear, but only like 4 of them that are actually like nice. Mm-hmm. They're my formal underwear.
Yes. And the ones you wear to galas.
Yeah. And I don't know why I just don't have all formal underwear. Like all the comfortable, like elegant underwear that I would wear for a special occasion, perhaps. Why aren't I wearing that every day of my life?
Every day is a special occasion.
So I just went all out and bought like a bunch.
Nice.
And by that, I mean like nine pairs a week's worth. But yeah, especially, I don't know, there are small improvements that you can make without spending too much money in the underwear quality department. And yeah, I don't want to be mistaken for some straight person with disgusting boxer briefs that have been stretched beyond belief because they're made of like a polyester cotton blend. Absolutely not! I want fucking microfibers. All right, I want those fibers to be so small, you need a magnifying glass to even pick them out. And then you risk setting them on fire because the sun's rays will become concentrated. We set a box on fire once.
What?
And when we were younger, we used to do the magnifying glass thing.
Uh-huh.
And like set leaves on fire.
Wow.
And then one time we took a cardboard box and did it, but didn't realize that the hot ray was going through the top of the box into the papers that were inside. And all of a sudden it was like a burst of flames came out of the box. And it was so scary.
That's hot.
Anyway, got some great underwear. Anyway, that's it. Thank you for listening to Unhappy Hour. You can head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. Hit that subscribe button, then rate us and review us, but only if it's nice. I don't want to hear your shit. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Media. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Melissa Slaughter, and me, Matt Bellisai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky. Music by Hansdale Sue. You can bother Barry at Finkelberry Pie. You can worship me at Matt Bellisai. And you can follow Unhappy Hour Pod on Twitter for all the latest podcast buzz. And that's it. That's everything. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye. Da na 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 na